Tesla's Gigafactory starts producing batteries, but the company still misses the mark this quarter. Find out how we spent billions of our hard-earned dollars on this holiday season and virtual reality exercise, plus a smart hairbrush that's listening to your head. All that and a whole lot more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1676, recorded Wednesday, January 4th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase.
And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use a Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT.
And by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more.
She's back.
I'm back. Welcome to Tech News Today. This is a show where we talk about technology. And I am back from the new year. If you are listening to this and not watching, good for you, because I have a big scar. Well, it's not a scar yet. A big scab on my nose.
Yeah, well, explain. How did this happen? Did you get into a fist fight?
Jason disagreed with me about fake news. And
this did not happen.
That
is untrue.
No, I got a ski in the face over vacation, which means it was a fantastic vacation.
Yeah, I would say that's a badge of honor. I was going to say we are the Rocky and Mickey of tech news.
Rocky.
Yeah.
But in
Rocky, Mickey, the coach, ends up dying. So that's probably not a good thing for me to be.
No, don't die.
I'll try not to. Okay. Try my very best.
All right. I think the tech news will keep us from dying
yes.
today. As the Republican-led Congress begins a new session this week, Politico reports that the GOP has adopted new rules banning and imposing hefty fines for live streaming or otherwise broadcasting protests on the House floor. Now, you might remember how some representatives used live streaming to broadcast a gun control sit-in after official cameras were turned off. That happened in June. But now, fines for streaming protests would start at $500 for the first offense and could go as high as $2,500. Representatives who oppose the new rule as unconstitutional say they've been fined before and they refuse to be silenced.
Yeah, like I'm kind of halfway expecting at some point for there to be funds of some sort set up to enable some, and I don't know what the legalities of something like that would be able to, I guess, fund these fines because it's not, I mean, what's to stop them from still doing this and being like, this is an important matter, important enough for people to know, therefore I'm willing to foot the cost of it.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, they have up to 30 days to appeal the punishment. So they could say, you know, this was free speech. I'm not sure exactly what the case. But, you know, yesterday was their first day and the first Congress's first day back.
It's not easy to come back after all that time.
No, it's not. Yeah, I was just thinking that.
This whole week has been me adjusting to coming back. That was only gone a week.
Yeah, I mean, but it wasn't a great day for them. They were going to... they were trying to shutter the independent ethics office.
Right.
And that was a move that was, even Trump said that was a bad idea. So that was crazy. So yeah, I don't think we've heard the last of live streaming on the Congress floor.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not like this is a new kind of rule in the sense that, you know, in the past it's been banned. Members have been banned. Like you said, they've been fined for this, for snapping pictures from the floor. This just kind of assigns a punishment to it. Personally, I don't necessarily think that it's probably going to change a whole lot, but I suppose we'll see. Apple wants China bad, enough so that it's willing to say how high when Chinese authorities request that it jump. Apple removed the New York Times app from its app store late last month at the request of the Chinese government, which cited that the Chinese and English language versions of that app violated local regulations. Those regulations actually were not explicitly defined in the request. The Times say they were not contacted by the Chinese government in this scenario. It was just Apple. Times is, of course, asking for Apple to reconsider doing this, and for in their kind of what they're implying is that you kind of folded a little too easily. This is an attempt to prevent Chinese readers from having access to independent news coverage, and that should not happen.
Yeah, I mean, you could still get the Wall Street Journal app, and there was a few other apps that
that are similar to the New York Times
that haven't been blocked. But the New York Times website has been blocked in China since 2012. 2015, the fall, Apple News is blocked. I don't even really know people that use Apple News, but it is blocked there, so you can't get
when everything else is blocked. Apple News might actually be really, really valuable. So
true, it is blocked as well. Yeah. So Katie Benner says she wrote this piece, and she said that this happened the day after the Times reported a story about a Chinese propaganda video. So really, she says this was in response to that, as was the blocking of the New York Times website in 2012, which was they wrote some unflattering articles about the prime minister, and then they blocked the website after that. So it really, China is very different from here in terms of journalistic freedom.
Yeah. And I mean, Apple is going to comply with local laws. It just kind of shows exactly how important the massive potential of the country the size of China has for these technology companies that are, they're public companies. They're built around growth. Shareholders expect growth. This is a massive market that is really difficult to walk away from or to make some sort of, ethical or political statement to say, well, we're going to turn away from that money. The potential of making money in that country for this or that reason. And that's kind of a part of what we're seeing here. Mm-hmm. That's really difficult to walk away.
The Wall Street Journal says consumers spent $967.6 million on mobile games for iOS and Android over the holidays. That figure is up more than 50% since last year. And nearly 90% of all gross app revenue came from games. So, on our year-end gaming episode, we talked a lot about how people are really ready now to pay for games. Not just the 99 cents. We talked about Super Mario Run, which was $10. People paid a lot for that. Traditionally, this time of year is big on game payments because people have new devices and they have some free time to pay. So mobile gaming is getting really big.
It's the biggest, largest sector in gaming right now. One study that I read said mobile $36.9 billion in revenue worldwide for 2016, compared to computer gaming $31.9 billion and console gaming $30.8 billion. I mean, the majority of the money, if what you're looking to do is make money and with games, then the mobile market is where you go. And also around the holidays, you see lots of discounts, lots of lower prices to kind of get you into the door, or bonuses. We'll give you 1,000 coins if you do this or that or whatever. So there's a lot of incentive, I think, not to mention all of those fancy new devices that people are playing those games on. So,
yeah, John, engineer John here, they talked about this on iOS today when I was out, but he just started playing a game called Field Runners Attack. It's an iPad game. He spent a lot of money on it. And we talked about it. It's like, people spend ridiculous amounts of money on shoes or purses or, going out to crazy fancy dinners. It's like everybody has their thing. He said his thing is Field Runners Attack. So
Field Runners was a fun game. I didn't know that there was a new one.
Attack. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That sounds like a delightful idea.
He said you can play it without spending tons of money too.
Of course.
He just wants to have the best, strongest players.
That's how it gets you. Uh-huh. You start playing and you get really into it, and then you just realize, maybe if I, if I just did this, I'd have the, yeah. And then it snowballs from there. Tesla had some bad news and some good news. First, it announced that it missed its target for 2016 vehicle deliveries by about 4,000 vehicles, seeing a slowdown in production during the last quarter in particular, thanks to changes to the autopilot software that are just now starting to kind of roll out. But today, Tesla started producing batteries at its new Gigafactory in Nevada, which is under construction, currently only around 30% complete in construction, but yet they've already opened it, and that seems to have shot Tesla stock to a three-month high, so shareholders are really happy to see that. Gigafactory was originally slated to start mass-producing batteries sometime around 2020, yet here you are, 2017, only 30% of construction is done, and they're already producing just a ton of batteries, and they kind of need to because of the whole Solar City deal that's really kind of happening right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of articles about this. Like, what do you pay more attention to? The fact that they missed their guidance? They missed their guidance by 4,000 cars, or the fact that they opened this Gigafactory that's, you know, going to be the biggest factory in the world, and it's, you know, it's going to be, by 2018, it'll double the world's production capacity for lithium-ion batteries. Wow. It's going to make, you know, that's give insane. So many jobs, to new jobs to people. So
or to robots. Let's be real. Probably to robots, but you know.
Well, right now, it'll be people.
Eventually,
for
robots.
Now, it'll be people. And I have a friend who's a recruiter, and one of their clients is Tesla. And she says it's really hard to get people, you know, to work for Tesla. And they're offering a good wage. But I guess, yeah, it's apparently still hard to find people to work there. Hmm. But yeah, I think also the way that the reason they miss their targets on cars often, there was an article in Business Insider that sort of explained the two reasons. And one of them is, as soon as like a giant factory for a regular automaker, as soon as the car leaves their factory, it's considered sold because it goes to a dealer. And then, you know, it's like, we deliver that car to a dealer, but Tesla doesn't have dealers. Mm. So when they have to wait to show that a car has been delivered, it has to go into a person's hand. They have to sign the form, say they have it. And, you know, so it's harder to deliver cars.
Right. It's not just here you go. Now do something with these.
Right.
It's they're making the deals directly with the people. And who knows, maybe, you know, for a number of reasons, why does that not end up hitting the hands of the people who wanted to buy it? I mean, we heard earlier this year that they were going to put that they had to kind of lower their forecast and that they were going to miss it. I don't know. Coming in 4,000 is shy, yes, of what they had targeted, 80,000 to 90,000 car deliveries, and they came in somewhere around 76,000. Could have been a lot worse. I mean, earlier this year, it actually seemed like it was going to be potentially worse than that. So I guess that's not too bad in the grand scheme of things.
Mm-hmm. Medium, the publishing platform started by the founder of Twitter and Blogger, announced layoffs today in a post on his struggling platform. Ev Williams said they will let go a third of their employees, close their offices in New York and D.C., part ways with transitional executives, and refocus on a, quote, less proven way to pay writers. Williams said writers should be paid on their ability to enlighten and inform, not their ability to attract the most eyeballs. But he wasn't clear on exactly where that payment would come from or whether or not Medium would adopt the paywall system. So this makes me wonder about all of the announcements we've heard, you know, their partnerships with Backchannel and The Ringer and all. Those are all part of Medium. So what happens with them? I don't look at a lot of Medium stories from people I don't know, but I do like it as a platform for writers that I do know and that I follow on Twitter. Is like an easy platform to really express things, not, and they don't have to be backed by, mm-hmm. you know, a big corporation or a
right.
big website. So I'm concerned what the future of Medium will be.
I know you are a big fan of Medium.
I am.
This I have learned throughout the course of 2016. and I like Medium too, actually. You know, there's a lot of really great great stuff being written by everyday people on Medium. That's kind of the power of the platform. It kind of suffers from a similar problem as Twitter in some ways, in the sense that it's a product that has insane potential, has a pretty great user base, including very key people using it, And you know, including, you know, President Obama just the other day, you know, writing on Medium, choosing Medium as the platform for writing something, yet struggling to kind of figure out some of those monetary challenges that are inherent. Medium grew quickly. That could be part of the problem. You know, it was one of those quick growth using the traditional ad model to do that in, you know, in the grand scheme of things, along with that growth. Obviously, that's not working. But he also says, Williams said that the ad model leads to things like clickbait, fake news. You know, there's a lot of kind of influence and reasons why the ad model can influence how you write and what you write and that sort of stuff, and trying to get away from this. So this seems in some ways a little bit bigger than we need to make money differently, and, you know, even more like it's making a statement as well in the kind of the current state of publishing online.
Yeah, I mean, because how do you support if no one's going to pay for content, if no one's willing to subscribe to any of the places that they read content from? There's no way for writers to get paid unless there's the advertising model, which leads to, yes, I want as many people looking at what I'm writing at all times. So that means I'm going to put in a headline that will attract people that might be
false. Wouldn't believe what blah 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 did when blah blah.
Or anything that it's not. I mean, it's the model is flawed. Because Medium is a great place for Obama. Or it's a great place for, you know, the head of Google's self-driving department to talk about. It's great for all that, but is it great for someone who wants to make a living as a writer, who wants to do research, who wants to, you know, take time to fact check? No, because they're not going to get paid to write something on Medium. They have to go to a place where they are backed by a big corporation, you know, a big website.
Yeah.
Or they're not, you know, or a place where it's the ad revenue model.
Could you see as a fan of Medium, could you see it succeeding in a paywall kind of approach? Do you think that's too limiting based on what they have going there?
I don't know. I mean, we subscribe, like Leo subscribes to a lot of sources, which we use for work, you know, but I personally, I don't put my money where my mouth is. Like, I don't subscribe myself, like I'm not a member of any websites that I read, with my own money. I don't. So,
well, many of the sites, I mean, they offer the free and they offer the paid, or they offer you a number of things for free before you have to kind of accept the fact that you don't have access unless you do pay.
Right.
I understand that completely. I wonder if that would work for Medium. And if not, then what is the approach? How do you end up making money? I think it's a problem that whether they're doing it out of necessity or whether they're doing it out of that, as well as trying to kind of make a statement based on where things are at, I think it's a problem that needs to be addressed, because we're starting to kind of see a lot of dramatic effects around why that might not be the best way to go about it. But at the end of the day, they need to make money, you know, and if you don't do that, you're going away.
Right.
And I would hate to see Medium go away.
Right. I mean, we are supported by advertising, but we don't, you know, we don't need to do like the clickbait sort of, you know, keep listening right now because I'm about to do an ad, you know, that we don't have to do that because it's a different model. So, but, you know. Speaking of advertising, after the break, we'll check in with Father Robert from CES. But first, let's take a minute to thank Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. Now, another company making some new announcements at CES is Tracker. That's a product you've probably heard about on this show before. They've made some improvements to help us find all our lost possessions. Newsweek reports the average American wastes 55 minutes a day looking for things that they own but cannot find. Tracker makes losing things a thing of the past, and we'll tell you how to get one for free. The Tracker Bravo locates misplaced keys, wallets, luggage, instruments, bicycles, electronic devices, even pets in just seconds. The coin-sized device is constructed with anodized aluminum for the thinnest, most durable tracking. You can easily attach it to your items with a key loop or stick it with the adhesive that comes with it. It's enabled with Bluetooth LE, so the battery lasts you up to a year. You can add a laser-engraved message to each Tracker Bravo, like return or pet info, and you can now personalize your tracker with a custom-printed image. Pair Tracker to your iOS or Android device and find its precise location with a tap of a button. It's that easy. Your phone can track up to 10 devices at once. You can customize two-way separation alerts so you're notified before you leave your item behind. And if you lose your phone, you press the button on the tracker and your phone will ring even if you've had it on silent. With over 3.5 million devices shipped, Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world, so your lost item shows up on a map, even if it's miles away. If you lose your item, the Tracker app records its last known location on a map. Then when another Tracker user comes within a 100-foot range of your item, you'll receive a GPS update of where your item is located. Go to thetracker.com and never lose your possessions again. Plus, just for our audience, if you enter promo code TNT, you'll get a free Tracker Bravo with your order. That's thetracker.com, promo code TNT to get your free Tracker Bravo today.
All right, CES ramp up is underway. In fact, the show officially begins tomorrow. Finally, we're there. We've been talking about it all week. Show hasn't even started yet. But our own Father Robert Ballesteri is already in Vegas checking out some of the cool technology, including the Mohu system for cord cutters. Let's check it out.
Thanks, Megan. Thanks, Jason. We're here at, actually, before CES starts. This is CES Unveiled. I thought you might want to see what I think is one of the most exciting pieces of technology to start the show, and that is something special for cable cutters. You know those cord folk, the people who want to get rid of Comcast. They want to make sure they're not paying a monthly fee. They want to make sure they can get all their digital entertainment. Well, a while back, I got a press release for this. It's a Mohu antenna, and I'm speaking with John Cable, who's going to explain why this might be the missing ingredient from your cord-cutting lifestyle. John, what is this?
This is Mohu Airwave. This is the world's first wireless antenna, the world's first combination OTA and OTT device, and we think is the most beautiful antenna ever made.
So what you've allowed me to do is you've now given me a device that out of the box can receive over the air OTA transmissions in HD, which most of us are getting. If you're living in a major city, you've got them.
Absolutely.
And watch them on a network-connected device.
That's right.
What do you have to do to make that happen?
Okay, so we've actually built a app for Apple TV, Roku, Amazon Fire, your phone, your tablet, everywhere you need TV. We have an app. This works by connecting to your Wi-Fi and connects to that app, and you get OTA just like you would get a streaming service on your streaming box. So now we've kind of taken away the different inputs, and now we've combined everything into one ecosystem.
Okay, but before we go any further, this sounds an awful lot like a business that we all heard about years ago, made a huge splash, called Aereo. They bought a building in New York, they set up arrays of antennas, and then they sold over-the-air broadcasting to people who wanted, well, what was happening in New York. The whole idea was, look, we're just renting you space. Great idea. I tried it once. It worked really well. But they got sued out of existence. So why aren't the broadcasters going to come after Mohu for essentially doing the same thing?
So I don't think it is the same thing. What we're doing is taking the broadcast that comes into your home and doing a private performance within your Wi-Fi network. It never leaves your home. It's completely safe and legal.
Got it. So the whole idea is, look, we're not selling you a service. We've sold you a device.
That's right.
What you do with that device is up to you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the setup, because this is also something that our audience knows about. There are ways of doing this currently. You could get yourself a home run box, get a couple of cable cards, and now you've got the access of a DVR and a network translation for all that cable programming. You could get something like a Synology NAS with a little USB dongle and pull that programming off right out of the air. But the issue has always been the antenna. If it's OTA, you need to get a good signal, and that's not always going to be in your network closet. So how do you create a network device that still can get my OTA signal?
So those you can absolutely do this on your own, but what we've done is combined everything into one device. This is a device that hooks to your Wi-Fi. You're completely unencumbered by wires now, and you get the best placement. That's the real key. Antenna is about placement. So if you need to get this high, so easy to do. All you need is power.
All right. Where will we be going for this? Because obviously people are going to be interested. Anytime you can tell them, hey, you can cut off a $60 a month cable bill and get most of the same programming plus all the local stuff, people get excited. But where do you want to see Mohu next year? Are you just going to sell antennas, or are you going to start looking at maybe increasing your product offering, maybe making there a more social aspect? What's in store for Mohu?
I think the future for us is free TV everywhere. We really believe it's the one thing that unites all Americans. They dislike the cable company. So we're going to continue to build products that make people really happy and get them free TV easily. And that's our future. In 2017, I think you're going to see everybody getting on board.
Thank you very much for speaking with us, John. Thank you for sharing this tech. I am so excited to try this out. I really want to see how it works, especially in San Francisco, which has some great OTA programming. I think Mohu might be for me.
Awesome.
Megan, Jason, there you have it. CES hasn't started, but I'm already calling this one of the best products. If you're looking for a way to get OTA programming without paying an arm and a leg, maybe you need to look at Mohu.
It's funny with all the cord cutting, you know, how it's evolved over the years. It's like people have retracted away, and actually it seems to be picking up steam because there's a lot of devices that are actually enabling it in a more comfortable way for people to cut the cord moving away. But then they realize, wait a minute, there's free content floating in the skies. I completely forgot about that. And so devices like this are going to make that super, super capable. And then yesterday, we talked about the Dish Air TV that kind of combines the Sling TV offering with the OTA antenna to kind of integrate that into the guide and into the box and everything. So there's a lot of options now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it is interesting because we were just talking about using, you know, the advertising model versus free, but TV's always done both, right?
Yeah,
true. Not always. It wasn't all, you know, it used right. to be, it's always done the advertising model, but we've just gotten used to paying for commercial TV for so long because, you know, we don't, you know, the antenna wouldn't work. I wonder if that would work locally, because I know just with attaching an antenna near Petaluma, it doesn't, we can't catch.
Yeah, I mean, I've tried the indoor antennas around here and those are not strong enough. I'm told if I actually go the rabbit ears or the on top of the roof antenna approach, I'll probably have better luck. I just don't want to do that. But this is probably what needs to happen in order to make it work. And I would totally use one of these types of devices in order to do that, because I mean, the content is out there. Mm-hmm. Might as well grab it.
Just grab it.
Obviously, a big thanks to Father Robert Ballester, who's out in Vegas with the crew. They chatted with the folks at Mohu, and we really appreciate it. Father Robert is going to have a bunch of coverage from the show floor over the next few days here for TWiT. You're going to find that once it publishes at twit.tv/specials. But we are not done with CES on this show. We've got a bunch of other things to talk about. But first, we have to thank a sponsor of this episode, of course. We want to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone you can trust who has your best interest in mind and who can help kind of hold your hand through the process. I know when I was applying for a mortgage and going through that whole process, it's not like you know what you have at the end of the rainbow, but kind of you need a little bit of help to get there. And finding all of that information, of course, my wife and I had to dig this up from all over the place. It was not the easiest thing to coordinate, to manage. Doing it kind of long form was not that fun. With Rocket Mortgage, you're going to get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision and to do it easily. You don't have to waste time searching through stacks of paperwork or your old files. With Rocket Mortgage, you can securely share your financial information to get a mortgage approval in minutes. You can even adjust the rate and the length of your loan in real time to make sure that you get the mortgage solution that's right for you. Whether you're looking to buy a home or even if you want to refinance your existing mortgage, you can lift the burden of getting a home loan by using Rocket Mortgage. So skip the bank, you skip the waiting, go completely online. Take it into your own hands. Go to quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. All right, time to get back into the weeds of CES for more tech gadgety goodness. First up is LG, who announced a slew of things, including, by the way, the fact that all of their appliances going forward are going to have Wi-Fi connectivity. So we've officially entered the age of internet. But we like robots here on TNT, so let's check out LG's Hub robot. It's a, quote, intelligent home assistant. We'll see if it's intelligent when we get our hands on it. That LG says is meant to compete with Google Home and Amazon Echo. Some of the models have wheels, two glowing blue eyes. It can talk to appliances, kind of like, you know, LG's own Wi-Fi enabled appliances to control them as well. The smaller models don't actually have wheels. I think it's the large model that's meant to be in like, they have a model that's meant for like hotels mm-hmm. or whatever for,
department stores.
Yeah, something. Exactly. For informational things, but
it looks like an airport maybe.
Yes, airport, another great place for this robot. So what do you think? Do you want one of these to replace your Echo?
No, actually, I think instead I'm going to take googly eyes and put them on my Echo because it seems like the eyeballs are what really make the robot.
Yeah.
Anthropomorphic. That word. You know, anthropomorphic.
You know what we're talking about. You know the words that we're trying to say that apparently we can't talk anymore.
In other words.
I mean, in some ways, the eyes, the Google eyes that you're talking about, remind me of the robot that we actually talked about yesterday on the show, the Curie robot, which, by the way, I had no idea that they were going to be a sponsor. That was announced this morning. So Curie is a sponsor on the network. Mm-hmm. Apparently things are going well for Curie. Did not know that yesterday, but there you go. There's my disclosure.
And you wouldn't believe what that robot could do for you.
It can blink its eyes. That much I know. And you get that here as well. So if you need eyes with your smart assistant, here you go. LG's got you covered.
Well, I also think the display is important. Like that, you know, we've heard rumors that there will be a future Amazon Echo with a display. And then you start to think, like, what's the difference between that and an iPad that you can control with your voice that had mm-hmm. better voice control than Siri? Yeah, I mean, I like robots. I have always liked robots. But I wonder, I mean, do you have to have because it's supposed to be able to talk to your washing machine and, you know, vacuum your room
leave and it's like, oh yeah, like, okay, we'll vacuum.
Yeah, like the Jetsons robot. But do you mm-hmm. have to have all the LG devices, or do they just have to be connected to the internet and maybe not an LG device?
I'm hoping that it's wider than just LG's devices. I guess I don't know the answer to that exactly, whether it's going to just talk with other internet connected devices. What standard is it working on for IoT? Because there's at least a few different standards out there. What exactly is this? What language is it speaking in that regard? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think if they're doing it right, they're opening it up. But they did just announce that all of their appliances going forward would have that capability. So I could also see them pulling the kind of thing where it's like, our entire ecosystem is meant to work together tightly and seamlessly. So
anthropomorphically.
Yes.
There, I did it.
You got it. Well, got there with the word.
Faraday Future made some big announcements at CES. Now, we haven't heard much good news from the LA-based Chinese-backed Faraday Future since last CES when they revealed a high-concept electric car. Back in November, the company made some bad news when they shut down their Las Vegas factory after falling behind on payments. But last night at CES, Faraday Future revealed its first commercial electric vehicle aimed squarely at the Tesla market. It's called the FF91. It has a 378-mile range, 1,050 horsepower, and a 0 to 60 mile per hour time of 2.39 seconds, which makes it faster than the Tesla in that sense. Jalopnik said the car comes equipped with 10 cameras, 13 radars, 12 ultrasound sensors, and LiDAR. Right now, you, Jason, can put down $5,000 to reserve one for yourself. The company has yet to release a full price tag or a production date. And the presentation, I wasn't at CES, obviously I'm here, but the presentation was a bit awkward. You got your wallet out.
Get my wallet
maybe
out.
Before you
totally
open
have
your
$5,000 in here.
We should take a look and watch what happened when they tried to watch itself park.
Now, YT, I would like you to send the car onto center stage in the way that you would do it if you arrived home one evening and wanted to send the car to the garage. So using the auto valet park, just press the button, and it will find its way to the garage.
Whoa.
Of course it's going to work, right? And then they step back.
What?
And it thinks for a while.
What?
And it thinks for a little while. And
okay, it seems like it's a little bit...
Their hopes and dreams are crushed.
You would like to say a few words to the...
That's really
so
too
never,
bad.
It never does it. It's lazy. They anthropomorphized the car, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's not lazy. It's just not working. So put your wallet back.
I'm going to put this back in my pocket because I'm not impressed. I mean, it's a nice looking car. Facial recognition for keyless entry. You walk up and it goes, oh, I know you. It probably doesn't say that out loud, but it recognizes your face and then you can just get in.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how that works with pictures of you.
Yeah.
Because there's a pretty big payoff here if that actually works.
Yeah, it's estimated to cost $180,000. So, you know, not for me necessarily, but
someday aspire to this. Someday it will be for us.
I did watch that video several times because it's not only that it doesn't self-park, but like I had a moment where like, is it going to just, you know, go full on Christine on the stage there and just zoom out into the audience? You never know.
No, but I did realize that not that I want an actual representation of Christine that you could buy, but I wouldn't mind Kit from Knight Rider. Mm. If they could actually make Kit happen, I bet you someday down the line in the future, maybe Faraday can put that out. And I think that's
I was never a Knight Rider fan or. Did it? It wasn't a self-driving car. It would just talk to him, right?
Yeah, no, it had self-driving capabilities.
It,
yeah.
It wouldn't just talk.
Well, it also talked. It would. Yes, that was a big feature. Michael, I really liked that show. Apparently, Lego is showing off Mindstorm, but for a younger generation of builder with its new Boost sub-brand. The combination of sensors, motors, and included bricks allow children ages 7 and up to create things like robots, cats, vehicles, even a guitar. A companion app on a tablet is actually essential to building these creations using a coding interface with drag-and-drop modules, as well as designing the many behaviors that those creations will exhibit once complete, so you can kind of customize it to do and respond in ways that you want. For example, pulling its finger and it sounds a fart noise, which they've demonstrated. They say, yes, it's childish, but the kids love it, mm-hmm. which I can imagine they probably do.
Mm-hmm. Is this something that you might imagine getting for your kids?
I think it's really neat. I would, yes, I could imagine getting this for my children. Do I think that they would then take it and then be supercharged up to explore with it? I don't know, because sometimes they surprise me in that regard with the things that I think they're going to like and then they don't, and vice versa. But I think it's really neat. It's expensive. It's $160. It's going to be available in August. But I think any way that you can, like what this really does when you see the interface on the tablet and kind of the programming interface, it really instills basic kind of education around coding, around, you know, programming things in an if then sort of methodology. And that is essential in many ways to the future. You know, it's essential to now, but I have to imagine that's even more essential as we get further in the future, as jobs are virtualized in many ways. You know, we have to educate ourselves in more technological ways. And I think starting young, if you can make it entertaining and enjoyable for kids to do this, then I think that has long-term benefit. I have to imagine it does.
Yeah. Lego Mindstorms, which is, as you said, it's for a little bit older. This is aimed at 7 to 12-year-olds, and then Lego Mindstorms picks up after that. And that's been around for 20 years almost, I feel like. Almost 20 years.
It's been around for a while, yeah.
And I've always been a fan of Lego Mindstorms. And, you know, a couple months ago we talked about Fly Bricks, which was a drone that was sort of made of Lego-like bricks. I got that for one of my 11-year-olds for the holidays, for Christmas. He loved it. And it was amazing because it took you sort of put it together like Lego bricks, and you fly it. You can make a quadcopter or an octocopter. And then, you know, it lands and it breaks because it's Lego, like, you know, you throw Lego, and then you put it back together.
Yeah.
And it really was, you know, it worked as intended. It wasn't cheap either, but yeah, I do think that the combination of Lego and any kind of sort of building robots and coding, that's going to be helpful.
I think overall, for something like this to work with kids, and especially 7-year-olds and above, is that it has to be capable and relatively easy and not overly complicated. Like if you overly complicate it, which something like this maybe needs to be based on what you're actually doing with it, you run the risk of like the kid detaching from it entirely, because it's just like not quite pushing through to get to that point of, aha, I understand how to do this now. And so you run that risk. But I suppose that's what would probably make something like this a really good kind of like companion toy where, you know, parents and children work together on it until they feel more comfortable with it.
Yeah, I mean, being able to make things, that skill should not be underestimated.
Yeah, for sure.
Fitbit is expanding its tech health features by integrating with several different services, including a meal plan and a VR exercise bike. Today at CES, the fitness wearable company announced that as a Fitbit wearer, you can get personalized menus based on your wearable data from a company called Habit. That won't come for free, but you can get it. You can also get Fitbit credit by riding the $400 Veer Zoom. That's a virtual reality bike that lets you strap on some goggles and actually pedal through a world as a race car driver, a tank commander, even a Pegasus. I think Russell Hawley talked about this briefly on a show before on Monday. The Veer Zoom works with PlayStation VR, Oculus, and the HTC Vive. So some announcements from Fitbit. The Habit is a $300 toolkit that will take your data from your Fitbit and know exactly what you need to eat based on all kinds of biomarkers, 60 biomarkers. I'm not sure what that means, but it sounds like something you'd pay $300 for because you wanted to lose weight.
Now, if I could use the Fitbit to actually cook my food for me, it'll help me pick what I need to eat and then make it for me, that would be actually really nice. $399.99 for the Veer Zoom system.
That seems worth it.
It seems pretty reasonable, actually, considering.
But you have to also have the VR, which is not.
Well, yeah, of course. You've got to have the VR.
You already have it, and you want to pretend like you're pedaling a Pegasus while you're.
Pedaling a Pegasus.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's pretty boring. I don't know. If you don't want to pretend like you're pedaling a Pegasus, please email me at megan@twit.tv. I need to know.
I'm sure the experience is probably really immersive when you're flying on a Pegasus and what you're actually doing is moving your legs and riding a bike. But there are video where it like shows them riding a bike superimposed on top of the Pegasus that's flying through. I don't know if that necessarily motivates me to say I need to do this. It kind of looks a little cheesy, but... what you gonna do? I don't know. I could see how if you were in the view though, that would probably be really cool. Mm-hmm. Probably be pretty cool. I don't know. Have you always wanted to fly a Pegasus?
Always.
Be honest.
Yeah, always since Never Ending Story.
Ah, okay.
That wasn't a Pegasus, but that was something. That's what I want to fly.
Yeah. Yes. Oh man, the Never Ending Story. I have to watch that again. Samsung and Google. Sorry, you're taking me back right now. Samsung and Google partnered up to unveil the Chromebook Pro and Chromebook Plus, two Chrome OS laptops with some unique features. Both have 12.3-inch touchscreen displays. Those touchscreens, of course, make them ideal for running Android apps, which you can do in Chrome OS now. Also, 4 gigs of RAM, 32 gigs of storage. The display can actually fold all the way around, revealing a tablet form factor when you need it. And finally, docked inside the laptop is a stylus. Not an S Pen, they say. It's just kind of a stylus, so it doesn't have some of the advanced features of an S Pen. That can be popped out when needed. It docks similarly to the Galaxy Note series. But I think this looks really nice. It's an aluminum body design, USB-C ports for power external monitor connectivity if need be. I think it looks great.
I think it does, too. It's sort of their answer to the iPad Pro or the Surface Book. But much cheaper.
Right. You know, the Chrome OS world is just a less expensive world. So when you're talking about these, the Plus starts at $449. There's no official price on the Pro. What differentiates these? Because, you know, most things are very, very much the same between them. The Plus has an ARM processor, so kind of a lower power processor. The Pro has an Intel Core M3. So I'm not sure that the Pro is going to come in an insane amount higher than that $449 price point. I'm guessing probably like $100, $150 more, but that's purely a guess.
No, I can't tell. It folds on itself? So you hold...
How do you mean? Like you can fold it back? And,
yeah.
Yes. I mean, you can fold it all those ways. There's no rotation or anything like that. It's just basically you can do the three different stages up in a laptop mode, kind of the tent mode, and then all the way around so that you can use the tablet. And that actually, that's really nice because... Anymore, I feel like the tablet form factor, just tablets in general, as a trend has really died down. But yet there's still a lot of reasons why you might sometimes want to do things in the tablet form factor. The fact that Chrome OS now has support for Android apps and the fact that this can transform into that tablet form factor means that if you're thinking, do I get an Android tablet or not? I mean, more and more, I think what you do is you get a Chrome OS that can do this sort of thing. Because then you have the laptop when you really need it for productivity stuff, and you have the ability to do the tablet and all the Android tablet apps, or just Android apps in general, in a tablet mode. And it's like you get the best of all worlds.
Now, would you get this? Would you buy
this? I actually think it looks really nice. I'm going to need to upgrade the Chromebook Pixel at some point. The fact that this is a Google and Samsung partnership might hint at the fact that this is kind of the Pixel, you know, the next Pixel step, let's say, unless Google has some sort of Pixel coming down the pipeline by the end of the year. So you're always taking a gamble. But yeah, I'd seriously consider it because I need to upgrade this at some point. So might do that.
TNT's fan of the day is Andres Salgado, who visited the studio yesterday with his family. I missed him sadly, but he watched the episode of TNT live. And Andres said on Twitter, "I'd rather watch live."
Yeah.
You can watch live too. Tickets at twit.tv. Send an email. Come and visit us. We've got lots of room for you. And also, you can show us how you watch or listen to TNT, record a video, or take a picture of yourself or your setup, post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT, and we will find it. Now, after the break, perhaps the greatest announcement from CES 2017, a tiny microphone that listens to your hair. But first, let's take a minute to thank Epson, the sponsor of this episode. Epson's revolutionary cartridge-free EcoTank line of printers for home and office introduce a new age in printing. The EcoTank ET4550 wireless all-in-one printer doesn't use ink cartridges. Instead, it features an amazing, innovative, refillable ink tank, earning the title of CES 2016 Innovation Awards honoree. No more out-of-ink frustration. It includes up to 2 years of ink. That's equal to 11,000 black pages or 8,500 color pages. You can save up to 80% on ink with low-cost replacement bottles. Also, it's powered by Precision Core printing technology. It has auto two-sided printing and a 30-page auto document feeder. Easy wireless printing from tablets and from your smartphone. All EcoTank printers deliver an unbeatable combination of convenience and value. With Epson's EcoTank line of printers, you'll have the freedom to print without running out of ink. The Epson EcoTank system was named the 2016 Small Biz Windows Printer of the Year. You can visit Epson.com/EcoTank right now to transform the way your home, office, or workgroup prints. For the best combination of ease and value, turn to the Epson EcoTank printers. That's EPSON.com/EcoTank. And we thank Epson for their support. Last year, you might remember my CES fascination with the $4,000 Samsung smart fridge. Do you remember that?
I remember that. Thankfully, it wasn't one of the Samsung products that split off into a million pieces no. throughout the year.
But also, I didn't get it. And so this year, I'm setting my sights a little lower on the $180 smart hairbrush from L'Oreal Karatez brand. The brush announced at CES contains an accelerometer, a gyroscope, commodity sensors, come on, and tiny microphones that listen to your hair and tell you whether it's breaking. The Karatez Hair Coach, powered by WeThings, then connects to an app and tells you how to care for your hair. And when I say how to care for your hair, I mean it tells you what products you need to buy.
Pretty much. You spend close to $200 for something to market products to you. Sign me up.
Well, did you know that your hair breaks?
I mean, I know that hair breaks. Do I need a brush to tell me? I mean, I go to get my hair cut every other month or so. That's a professional that every 2 months is looking at my hair and can tell me if my hair is breaking. Mm-hmm. That's as much runway as I need to know about whether my hair is breaking or not, I think.
Well, it's available later this year. I mean, I sometimes feel like I need a hair coach.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Does your brush really need algorithms?
I think so. It can tell breakage, not just breakage, but damage, tangles.
I do think that you need to get a review unit of this and do a full review. I think it's very essential.
I'll just brush my hair like Marsha Brady on the show. I'll have the nose like Marsha Brady and brush my hair 100 times. And
you're teaching the AI every time you brush. Yes. It gets smarter and smarter.
I think it's totally creepy. Let's be honest, that microphones will be listening to you all the time from your hairbrush.
I hadn't thought about that aspect. I mean, it's probably not sending that anywhere. It's not connecting to the internet, right?
Well,
it's connecting to your app on your phone. Your brush is connecting to the app on your phone because that's necessary. I don't know what to think about that.
I don't know what to think about it, except for you got to love CES, especially sitting in this chair and not there getting the germs.
That's true. Although I feel like I got the germs anyways. I'm fighting a cold if you hadn't noticed. Burke says scissors break your hair, by the way. Getting on the record here in this topic. That's technically true, I suppose.
Scissors do break your hair. Thank you.
But in a good way, Burke.
Mm-hmm. Now, we heard from many of you that you wanted a Twit store. You said it, you wanted it, and here it is. The new Twit store is now open. Doors are open. Check out the new designs. We brought back some popular favorites. This is not a brick and mortar store yet. It is an online store. We'll be adding show-specific gear, new designs every week. You can go there. All you have to do is go to twit.tv/store. The no smart fridges and no smart hairbrushes are sold, and there are no tiny microphones in these T-shirts. They are dumb T-shirts. They are not smart. They're not going to listen to you. We promise.
They're dumb T-shirts with smart logos.
No, they're good-looking.
I'll have to work on that.
They're not going to listen to you. They're not going to record your conversations.
It's true.
They're not going to do anything but be pretty.
That's true. Yet. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can find us on Twitter. We're at TechNewsTodayTV.
And I do hope that when you were home for the holidays, you subscribed to all your relatives' phones.
Did you?
Yes.
Did you?
If you didn't, you probably didn't know how to subscribe. Here's how. twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to Anthony, our technical director for the day. Thanks to Burke for helping out in the studio. Thanks to Kevin for editing the show. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We will see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody. Oh, and thanks to Father Robert Bouncer for the segment. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.